Our moment of silence on the audio recording.
All right, we are here for the Planning Commission meeting on March 6, 2014.
Are we on?
We are on.
Yes.
We couldn't have awkward silence if our life depended on it.
Good evening, Commissioners.
Good evening.
For the record, Gordy Euler, Stark County Community Planning. First up on the agenda, which is a busy agenda tonight, is a work session with you on where we stand with recreational marijuana. This PowerPoint, along with the staff reports and some apps that we prepared that have been online, the larger versions of which are behind you, are all in your notebook, the pen notebooks. I think you want to follow along, Derek. This is a bit of background to bring you up to date. I-502 was adopted in November of 2012 by the voters of Washington. And so we'll provide a little background on that. What we need is some to talk about some land use options for the three types of facilities that are going to be licensed by the State Liquor Control Board. So by way of background, marijuana is still legal under the Federal Controlled Substances Act. 1970, nothing has changed there. Good evening.
Hello.
The federal government still maintains the right to prosecute state-authorized medical marijuana users, but also recreational marijuana users. We've gotten some assurance from the Attorney General that they're taking kind of a wait-and-see attitude in terms of both the state of Washington and the state of Colorado. So, next. So here's the initiative. The initiative requires the Liquor Control Board to adopt regulations for facilities for production, processing, and retailing of marijuana. These regulations went into effect on November 16th. There's the codification. The initial license application period for those three types of license ended in December. And as you probably saw in the paper this morning, the very first license in the state of Washington has been issued. Oddly enough, to a man named Mr. Green. I thought that was perfect. In Spokane. So, next. So, the state licenses the facilities, but local jurisdictions get a voice in where the facilities are located, which is basically why we're here tonight. We don't have zoning requirements at the moment that allows these facilities. So, the board adopted a six-month moratorium back in August. The latest version of this. That's right. Board affirmed the moratorium in October. The moratorium expired. I had changed this. The board had a hearing on February 11th and extended the moratorium until June 11th, so we got 4 months. And in terms of the licensing arrangements, there's no limit on production licenses or processing licenses. Clark County will get a total of 15 licenses within the county boundaries, and unincorporated Clark County will get 6 of those for retail. So there is a limit on retail. So I have some statistics later on here. Next. In terms of public meetings, we had 4 open houses back in November. We made a presentation to NAC in December. We had a board work session again on January 8th to kind of get just bring them up to date as to what we were doing. This is the old version of this. Say March 6th and March 20th rather than February. And the board hearing has now been scheduled for, we've asked for a hearing on April 15th. So to the board to discuss this. Next. So in terms of land use options, the WACs allow for both indoor and outdoor growing. And probably the centerpiece of the WAC is a prohibition of three kinds of facilities within 1,000 feet. Of an array of facilities that are listed here. And the question then becomes where to allow production facilities, where to allow processing facilities, and where to allow retail facilities. That's the essence. So, also, there's WAC limits for retailing. It's 8 a.m. to midnight. I think we could be more restrictive than that. Actually, in our proposal, we are more restrictive than that. I'll get to that in a minute. WAC bans using symbols and advertising, so you can't have advertise your grow place with a marijuana leaf or anything like that. We asked in the open houses should we ban signs altogether, and for that really doesn't make much sense for retail operations. I mean, people need to know that they're there. station requirements, should there be distance between facilities? The city of Vancouver, as you saw, adopted an ordinance on Monday. They have a 300-foot spacing requirement between retail facilities. We looked at this and chose not to include it. And then co-location facilities, this was an overwhelming request at the open houses that we allow processing and production at the same location. You'll see when we get to that. And then we've just included some language in the draft code that you have that these are requirements for noise, glare, smoke, or basically things that you would do for any normal development. So these are the kinds of options that we presented at the open houses. So here's we have 54 people total at the open houses. Most of them, virtually all of them, were people who were interested in applying for licenses. I think we only had one or two people who were wanting to know how this was going to work and how they could fan it around churches and some other things. Again, this information. This is where people, we actually gave them a big postcard to fill out as we were going through these. What zones should be in? Just at all the zones. And the information here that came back. Again, this information is in your handout. So next. Open houses, band signage, no. Band symbols, no, although that is required in the WAC. Distance between facilities, no. Co-location facilities, yes. And they voted for the maximum hours of retail operation. So that's what, this is the results of the open houses. So, as of the end of the year, this may be updated. This is the total number of license applications we had in the county. The total in the county is on the left, the middle column. The ones that are in unincorporated Clark County are the numbers in the right-hand column. Mm. So with 35 retail applications, the county gets a total of 6, so there'll be a lottery at some point. And again, I don't know if those are current numbers, but as of the end of December. So this proposal, which we put together, it's been on the website now for a couple of months. This is also in your information. We've created a new section of the Clark County Code. It would be 40-160. That's actually a typo, so that should be 260-115. One of the things we're proposing is to remove marijuana facilities from the definition of agriculture. And one of the reasons for doing that is you don't need a permit for an ag building in the county. And we want to make sure that because of the state's requirements for security and secure facilities that people kind of get a building permit. So that's one of the reasons we're proposing this.
Okay, I have a question. Just back here at the open houses, and I look at hours of operation. Are you saying that this was the comment?
Yes.
So they wanted it till midnight.
Which is what the WAC allows.
Yes.
Correct.
I understand.
Yes.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Pipe in if you need to.
Okay.
So we're proposing producing facilities in rural zones. No particular reason for this other than there's more land available. Thinking along the lines that this is more crop-like, even though we're proposing to remove it. We've split processing into industrial and non-industrial, and this is some information we got from the open houses, is that processing is really of two kinds. And what the proposal is processing non-industrial would be in the same place as is growing, which would allow the co-location. And then processing, if it was industrial in nature, we had it in the three industrial zones. So, light industrial, heavy industrial, and railroad industrial. And I think the last draft had BPO or railroad industrial. So, and then retailing would be basically in the commercial zones, not neighborhood commercial, but general commercial, and CR2 then would be rural commercial, because if somebody might want to put one of these in a rural center, we don't want to leave the rural people behind for retail.
So a rural center is included.
CR2 is commercial inside a rural center. And then we propose retail hours be 8 to 8 rather than 8 to 8. That's what's in the proposal that you have in your pack. Next. So that's pretty much the discussion. To answer questions, there's a website. Again, this is on the slide. Gary and I are the ones that worked on this. And that's the end of our report, so we'll answer the questions that you might have.
So just an observation from what you're saying. I mean, a lot of open houses scheduled, and almost nobody speaking against?
At the open houses, that's correct. Most of the people were saying, we're in the license process, the state's open the application period, where can we locate our facilities? And we said, you're in counties in moratorium, stay tuned. And we went through some of these various requirements, and you have the results as well as our recommendation are in your notebooks.
So, in the draft ordinance, page 2, at the top of the page, which is B4, is that the same wording as Pierce County wording for the prohibition until the federal law is resolved?
Can you refer to that again, your page number, Mom?
Yeah, page 2.
Up at page 2, it says 4 there. That's correct. The answer to your question is yes. That's the wording from the
same Pierce. As Pierce.
And same concept. It's not exact, but it's the same idea.
Okay.
Basically, for those of you that don't have it, it says what Pierce County did was adopt an ordinance, but they included this clause that said, by the way, until marijuana is made legal at the federal level, we're not going to issue anything at the county level.
And the reasons for that being in here are?
That's our get out of jail free card.
We were asked by the board to include that in the draft. Include this in draft language that you would consider.
So basically, disregard the state vote and say, hey, look, we're not going to allow it until the federal government says that it's okay.
It's an option for you to consider, so that's why it's here.
I'm a little confused on why we made a point of putting the production facilities in ag land and then took it out of an agricultural use. Could you explain that to me, please?
There's probably more reasons than I'm aware of, but the part of the idea was these buildings need to be fairly secure in terms of, and if it's going to be a new building, and if it's not an agriculture use, you've got to get a building permit for it. That was one of the main reasons for doing it. It is a crop, I grant you that, and people have argued that. I'm going to pull a code up here so people can see what we're proposing. Next one up, Val. I think this should be the latest.
It's already on the PDF on the bottom of the page.
Yeah, there it is.
It's right there.
Oh, okay. It's already there. Sorry. Alright.
What page is that?
Well, page 1.
It's on the first page. This is a definitional change. So.
But you only put it in ag zoning. in your proposal.
But the idea for purposes of the ordinance would be required to get people a building permit. For a building.
Okay.
This goes in the general definition of.
I buy into the building permit part. You're saying you need to be very sure about what the structure looks like, the security measures. But why did you choose only ag zoning to put it into?
I'm not following your question.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I got that wrong. But what
Just right here in D. Production facilities may be allowed on legal conforming lots in R5, R10, R20, Ag20, and FR40.
Yeah.
So that has to do with building. They're not saying you can't grow it there. We're just saying it's not. We're removing it from the definition of agriculture.
You can allow it there, but it's not exclusively there.
This says that you can grow and process on ag parcels.
But
D,
not
D1A and B.
Okay, but that's not the exclusive, right? You can produce in commercial land too, commercial zoning.
No,
all right.
this is where you're allowed to produce.
Okay. R5
on 1A. Yes.
So you have to go to rural land to do a non-agricultural crop.
If you want to look at it that way, sure.
Well. Give me another way of looking at it. I don't understand why we can't do it in industrial and commercial.
The growing part of it?
Yeah.
Okay, you need to make a recommendation.
I asked you why you chose this.
Partly based on research from what other counties are doing.
So I thought when we talked about it in an earlier work session, the thought was to contain it to greenhouse enclosed, can't see from outside.
Has to be that way anyway.
Facilities.
Yeah,
correct.
Sure, right.
So if you want to say we'll allow us to grow it anywhere, we'll amend this, or we'll take this to the board and say the Planning Commission's recommendation is it, we ought to allow it in industrial and commercial.
But I am missing the logic loop from your proposal on why you chose those. That's a very pointed choice. And I was waiting to hear that you had a reason behind it.
There's no right or wrong answer for this one. So if you want to make the recommendation that we expand the list of zones, that's fine.
So I guess where I'm at on this now, knowing that we have the Pierce County wording in this ordinance going forward, and that the commissioners have been very clear on their direction, I'd like to see this put together in such a fashion that should that circumstance change, we'll have a very workable ordinance for the county and its application. Pushing it all out into the rural and ag lands, I'm having trouble thinking to the constituency why we would require that as opposed to utilizing commercial and industrial property when we know the security measures won't be any less as a result of that. Sorry. Too loud. Okay, so I guess as I look at this, I'd like to have a discussion about the idea of if this was a legal conforming industrial use, is there a reason why we as the commission would see it needing to be pushed out into the rural ag lands?
Where can greenhouses be located? Nurseries?
Anywhere.
Greenhouses?
Anywhere.
They can.
Yes. Yeah. They're ag uses, as our code currently defines them.
So they can be in an industrial...
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And remind me, what's the reason why we want to say they're not agriculture? Because we want to make sure they get a building permit?
Yes.
And agricultural uses are exempt from building permit?
That's correct, yes.
Under circumstances.
Couldn't we go and amend that section and say all agricultural uses except... and list them there instead of accepting them out of the definition? It seems odd to me to accept them out of the definition when we're talking about basically growing plants.
Well, also, in the county, don't we allow agricultural uses in any zone?
We do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yes.
That's what we do. So that would also allow
In residential.
Everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere.
I see. Okay.
Potentially everywhere.
That's
yes.
Why.
That makes a little bit of sense. I can see we want it in residential zones, just like you wouldn't want it.
So then your point about saying that is that then make D1A moot?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So...
Now, wait a minute. It's only moot if...
No.
Marijuana is considered... an agricultural
activity. Right.
Mm-hmm. But it's accepted here in the
right.
The
so,
rules as written.
But Steve brought forward an idea of amending the ag
rule.
Wording to bring it back as an agricultural commodity.
Or we could amend this section to say a building permit is required for any structure.
But you'd also want to amend the other section to talk about not allowing it, I don't know if you want it in residential zones.
Well,
I mean,
I
agree with you on commercial and industrial and all that. But
personally, just from the point of view of a user's outlook on the code, if I were interested in researching what was required for a marijuana production facility, I'd just assume have all the stuff in one
place.
I agree.
I would agree.
and the zoning much narrower. Because there right now, production and processing, pretty broad in my mind.
Pretty broad with the limited
I like
rural
A. Well, I don't. I want. I mean, I kind of. I think it's pretty smart. If you just kind of for a second put aside number four, you know, what if the politics change or whatever, and this is in place? Where do you want these things? I mean, really ask yourself, where do you want production, processing? It seems like we're all over the place. When if it does come to fruition in the very far, far future, that we would say, okay, we're going to make sure we're limiting these things to these specific small plots. And I think looking at both production and processing, we're all over the board there.
To that point, it's a little bit outside of that. Gordy, you said that when some research was done, you discovered that there were some there are two ways to process. Was it that? Could you explain that?
Could I explain that?
Yeah. What are the...
So there was industrial, non-industrial.
Right. There's a place where you can do the two together, the processing and the growing. And then there's another.
We learned two things from the open houses. Number one, that people who are applying for licenses wanted to be able to co-locate. And number two was that not all processing was industrial.
Okay.
And
well,
so I had some correspondence with a guy I was talking to in King County, mm-hmm. and they actually came up with a way to split industrial and non-industrial, and it's defined here in the mm-hmm. processor one and processor two in definitions,
right.
And they basically so allowing the non-industrial to be in the same zones as producers will allow people mm-hmm. to co-locate. That solved one issue. And we drop back to the industrial processing, which I had some conversation with the building official and the fire marshal, in terms of the chemicals that are being used, depending on the size of the operation, would fall under industrial category. So that's why we ended up with what we did here.
Okay.
So, not yet. Yeah, hold that thought.
So getting to Carl's point, I mean, I'm not sure I understand it, because here it's limited to rural and ag zones plus.
I want limited to industrial zones. Period. I want to pull it in.
Well, it's not allowed in industrial at this point.
Well, that's what I'm
right.
saying. That's what I was kind of Ron was that was a good. That's what I was
saying.
I'm saying narrow where we would place these facilities if possible.
You know what, if that's where the PC wants to go, what we can also do, except that in the unincorporated area where the county has jurisdiction. I know the city of Vancouver just passed their own ordinance. They don't have rural, so I suspect that they will be limiting where this occurs in their industrial and perhaps commercial. We may have to look at what they recommend, what their final ordinance look like, and if that's the recommendation the PC wants to make, we can narrow it down to the ML and potentially in the commercial district only. That's one option, but it limits those that are in the rural area that may have the license. It will force them to then look at our ML and only commercial area. That's something also to consider.
Well, and then we're also going against the stated goal and objective of trying to create jobs by giving people the opportunity on their rural property to make a living. And clearly, having a processing facility is a way for a person to make a living on a rural parcel.
And again, we need to distinguish between
processing one
processing
and processor
here,
two,
and
correct,
it's
yes.
fairly well defined.
Yep,
I took
yep.
I used
and I saw that.
King County's definition.
Yep.
A lot of processing is not industrial.
Correct.
Drying,
curing.
We don't see any reason why it can't be done
yep,
with
that.
Production if that's what folks choose to do.
That makes sense.
Yeah, we're kind of on differing sides of the fence.
Yeah, if I'm a grower and I want to do industrial processing, I have to have two different locations. That's what this says. But if I'm a grower and I do some processing, I can do it and I get a license for both. I can do them at the same place. That's what this contemplates.
Yeah.
And I don't think we want to limit. I mean, in terms of the grand scheme of things. Pardon me.
No, it's great. I'm very listening.
In terms, we've got applications from all over the county, and I think the you know, Ron, I hear Commissioner Barker saying let's get more, and you guys need to decide what your recommendation is going to be. So, I mean, if this isn't the middle, we show this as kind of the middle ground.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
This takes in the vast majority of the county area, not necessarily where there's development located. The other thing to keep in mind is I think processors and producers, at least the number of ones I've talked to, would rather be isolated. They would put something out somewhere where and something wouldn't be called attention to. And that's another reason for thinking about rural areas, larger lots. You've got more screening. You've got things like that. It's harder to do in urban areas, and that's part of the reason we chose what we did. Retail, it's going to be retail. It'll be in a strip mall someplace, just like a liquor storefront is.
Bodies there.
Anyway, I don't know if I answered your question, Ron, but
following up on that point, in the rural residential zones, do we have any minimum lot sizes here for, you know, where these things should be sited?
Read the language, it'll answer your question.
It's got to be which section?
D.
Any of them, A, B, or C will answer your question. Legal conforming parcels.
Legal conforming parcels.
That means you have 5 acres.
You have a legal non-conforming. Like, I'm thinking, you know, there's a lot of 1-acre parcels out in the rural zone.
That's the way this is written. That's one of the things that's why the wording is there. But we want to make sure that people have larger parcels.
Yeah. I mean, do you think 5 acres? I mean, you got R5 zoning in there, but I mean, is 5 acres really, is that big enough? Or should we just, should we say a minimum of 10 acres?
Well, the
idea is they're going to be really isolated and we're going to screen them so the neighbors can't even see them.
A tier one growing license is 2,000 square feet. That's all. That's what, 40 by 50 building.
Yeah.
That's pretty small.
All right.
So that could be in an existing shed or an existing.
And 5 acres is shop. What, 300 by 600 feet? If it's a rectangle.
Yeah, that's 2,000 square feet. I mean, 5 acres is 200,000 square feet.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons we put legal conforming in here is that. You had to meet minimum parcel size, and that may be a nuance.
I'm sorry, I just got a 2.5-hour phone call, so
okay.
Trying to read this is like it's all swirling in my eyes. So that's why I'm asking for where it is.
Sure, and again, you'll have a couple of weeks to digest this, and we can certainly answer any more questions and concerns, and we expect you'll have them between now and the hearing. So
the WAC has an 8-foot requirement for screening. So when you're growing anything.
Eight foot tall.
Yes,
that's the maximum.
Maximum?
Tier one, tier two, tier three.
At least.
Tier one is up to 2,000 square feet. Tier two producer is 2 to 10,000. Tier three producer is 10 to 30,000.
Yeah, maximum up there.
So any and what happened is there were 20, almost 3,000 licenses applied for statewide. So the Liquor Control Board, any individual can apply for up to 3 licenses. So the Liquor Control Board said, because we have more licenses than we have allowable canopy, which is limited, capped at 2 million square feet in the state statute, they dropped back and said, we'll only issue one license to start with to anybody, even if you apply for more than one for a particular thing. So that's either here or there. That's just how things are happening at the state level.
Well, that's, I think, a good point for us, though, in this discussion is, do we want to differentiate between those tiers? I haven't seen that information.
In terms of the land use, there's no cap on, in terms of the licensing, I'm sorry, there's no cap on the numbers of production and processing. That's the way the statute was written. Whatever the Liquor Control Board now has done has been an intervening step. The only cap is on retail. Clark County unincorporated gets 6 retail licenses.
Yeah, but I think I was listening to you about the tier producer. No.
A tier one producer gets a license up to grow up to 2,000
square feet
space.
Right.
A tier two producer is 2 to 10,000 square mm-hmm. feet. A tier three producer is 10 to capped at 30,000.
Now 21.
But okay, so that being said, anybody that comes forward could have the potential of any one of those tiered licenses, correct?
And you could apply for up to three. So if somebody could come in at three different locations and apply for three, the same company, at the same location, three tier three licenses. The Liquor Control Board has said we have, because there's a 2 million square foot cap at the state level, we've got, if we issued everybody a license for growing, we'd be way over that. So they made the decision a couple of weeks ago just to start with and get things moving, to start by limiting people to one license to begin with.
But I mean, if you looked at the largest being 30,000 square feet, it easily fits on a 5-acre parcel.
Well, with sure, but a 2,000 square foot place to put it on a mandating a 5-acre parcel for 2,000 square feet.
But I'm also, if I am understanding correctly, even though they're limited to just one tier three, which would be the 30,000 at this time, it potentially could be three licenses all at the same place. The three buildings would bring it up close to 100,000 square feet.
Yeah, okay, right. So half of a 5-acre parcel.
So it's max canopy coverage for a grow license. You couldn't have more than 30,000 square foot canopy coverage.
On that,
on any parcel,
on whatever.
Yes, for one site.
So you couldn't for one site.
But what about
so
the three licenses
on one parcel?
Can't do it. No, can do. Okay.
Yeah, that's true. You could produce and then process on the same location. But if you had another grow operation, you have to go to a different address.
Yes.
Okay, so I think that gives us a lot of food for thought in the discussion about how we go forward with zoning and what our expectations are in that regard. Is there other items within the draft ordinance that have attracted attention to the board?
I want to go back one a minute and ask a question about, you said that, was it the liquor control that said there's only so much canopy space?
Statewide, correct.
Statewide.
Correct.
Where is that? Is that is that in the WAC?
Yes.
Is it administrative? Or?
It is. Okay. It's in the WAC.
Okay.
And I gave you the citation.
Okay.
It's in the PowerPoint.
Okay.
It's 314 WAC 314-55.
Okay.
Yeah, there it is there. And
yeah. Okay.
And
thank
so
you.
It's both in the WAC and in code. So.
Thank you.
So the questions are in terms of staff are, where do you want to allow them in terms of which zones? We had to think about signage, and I think the hours of retail were really and those are pretty big things, but those are the.
Why do we do signage in square inches instead of square feet?
That's right. That's a good question.
I've usually seen it in square feet, and I'm trying to convert 1,600, and I'm trying to divide by 144.
The only reason that it's written that way is
sounds like
it's
a foot and a half.
It's like 12 square feet. Right?
The only reason
it sounds
big.
Really
the only reason it's written that way, Steve, is that it's in the state law that way.
Right.
We took that language right out of
the one that was adopted by the voters.
Yes. No. The
40 inches.
Wax.
Oh, in the wax.
Signage.
The regulations that.
Yes. 40 inches. 60. And we can convert that easily if you wanted to. It's not a problem.
I'm just going to convert it because I'm curious how big it is. 11 square feet.
That's my side. It's close to 12.
So if you want to round that, we could change that. We probably should change that.
Oh, I just thought it was odd.
It is odd, but part of this, including the language that's in the list of things, a lot of that comes right out of the, we took it right out of the statutory language. So.
Wait, the WAC. Okay.
Correct.
So we had the public at the open houses ask for the operating hours to be 8 a.m. to midnight.
For retail, that's correct.
For retail.
That's what's
in
black.
And that was what came from the open houses.
Correct.
Came
and
from people who wanted to... It came from those
that felt strong enough to go to the open house.
This is what we have from the open houses, and that's, you know,
the people that most of those people, like we just heard, were the people that wanted the license.
So let's be clear. You can go ahead and label them if you want to.
I thought that's what Gordy said.
What we have is we have the people that turned out that were interested in it.
And then we have the responsible people sitting there making.
Oh, okay. So there was those that went to the open house, and then there's the responsible people.
Yes.
Okay. Trying to make a distinction somehow.
Mr. Chair, if you look on page 3, I think you can see, I believe it's item number E6.
Yes.
Yeah.
I understand that. My question was going to be, once again, how did we as the county determine that 8 p.m. was the appropriate time as opposed to midnight, which the WAC allows?
Arbitrary number.
Okay.
Then again, this is for retail.
Is it,
yes,
is
of
the,
course.
It is very similar to
WLCC when we used to be WLCC liquor stores. That was their hours, wasn't it?
Very similar.
I mean, are they open till midnight?
Very similar.
No, I mean, now you can get it at the grocery store, but back when you had to go to a state.
Right. You can buy it any time.
When you go to the state, there used to be open at 7 p.m.
Was it
7
or was it
8?
7 or
8.
It was 7 or 8.
7 or
8,
one of those two.
So, the answer to your concern, which is, I understand, we may understand, we did some research and we put together what we thought was a reasonably balanced ordinance based on the research we did. There was nobody that came to the open houses that were the would
never mind.
Okay, well, but that's the point. It's a little hard to say we think there should be spacing requirements and put it in an ordinance when everybody says no, that's a bad idea. It's just that everybody at the open house said that's a bad idea. That doesn't mean, as a land use tool, you couldn't add that in there if you wanted to.
Well, for the wineries, of course, it did have to do with noise and other things.
Sure.
We set hours.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
And for these kennels, you know.
Okay. Yeah, I think 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. we believe is reasonable. Other different minds may differ, but we think that 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. is reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Gordy, there was one person that was from the open house that was strongly against the whole thing, and they're here tonight.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I don't know whether you want to hear from audience members on any of this. It's up to you.
Well, we do have the rest of the agenda, and we will hear from them at the public hearing. So I'm kind of inclined to keep the agenda and ask anybody from the audience to submit written testimony and get it into the record. That way we'd be able to look at it ahead of time.
And come to the hearing.
Come to the hearing and testify.
The hearing is 2 weeks from tonight. Those of you in the audience, 6:30, will be next door here.
Is that just Planning Commission at that hearing?
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. On the 20th at 6:30 p.m.
Thank you.
So,
thank you, Gordon.
Thank you.
We'll move on to the agenda then.
Good evening, Commissioners. Urban Reserve is the last tab. And this is a proposal to add a provision in the Urban Reserve section of the code that would allow for property owners to boundary line adjust their property. There are certain areas, particularly in the center, when we did the comprehensive plan in 2007. We added urban reserve areas outside of the center's urban growth boundary. And we did it as a zoning overlay, so an underlying zone remained. In some areas, there's an R5 designation, which is a 5-acre minimum. So there's a particular issue with the property owner who owns two adjacent parcels and wants the boundary line adjust and sell one of the parcels and keep the other in forest designation, which requires a minimum of 6 acres. He has about 5¾ acres for each parcel. So he can't do that under the current zone without this amendment. So that's the specific issue, and it would normally come to you through the process that community development does with their biennial code amendments. But it came to us sort of between the last time they came to you, and they're not going to have an issue in the spring, so wait till the fall. It seems like it's a relatively minor change, and so the section of code would just allow for those adjustments and specific to that. Parcels where there's the overlay and the underlying zone. Hmm.
Did we hear from these people at a hearing before?
I don't think so. I'm not sure.
So, by making that adjustment, do we take the parcel that is in the, did you say it was forest designation on the other side?
It's in the current use program for timber. So he's got essentially 2 5¾-acre parcels in timber currently. They're 2 acre lots. So he wants to sell off 5 acres and have the remainder lot stay in timber. In order to do that, he needs at least 6 acres to stay in the timber program.
So he's going to adjust 3/4 of one parcel out into the timber land?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, I understand now.
Yeah, and this change is only applicable to this particular area in the La Santa UGA where we have the underlying zoning as rule of 5, and then we apply the overlay of in terms of the urban reserve. The all the other urban reserve areas are clean, I mean, so this will not be applicable to all other urban reserve areas because we don't have a conflict of the underlying zoning and the overlay. Mm-hmm. So this is all the area where this will be applicable.
Okay. Any questions? Bueno.
This will be the policies.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not just saying that, are you? Did you bring your binder?
No.
Every time. The idea of you wanting to watch it grow.
bring it. And if you have your binder, put it in section 2 or chapter 2 on your tie.
It's really chapter 2.
All right, yeah. I was going to say, this really goes to chapter 2.
And it is written so
even though it's 1 point.
Okay, there it is. All right.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi. I'm Jackie. I haven't really been before you too much, so I just wanted to introduce myself. In community planning, I staff the Historic Preservation Commission as well as the Commission on Aging. And so do the on the land use side. So took on this new chapter because it has a lot of the elements that things I've been working on recently. So this new chapter has the old land use chapter, the historical and cultural chapter, and the community design chapter. So this is supposed to set the stage on what we want our communities to look like and feel like and include. include. So there's a lot of policies that were lumped into here that were, you know, original from the first comp plan. So what my attempt was to do is to kind of go through them, fresh eyes, make sure that the statements were actually policies and not, got a lot that were more strategies rather than policy statements.
Hey, we heard this from somebody else. Okay, I got the
right here.
So, or moving them to another chapter that they more, it was better for, a better fit for. So, and in other ways, I tried to reword them so they were just kind of easier to read, or, created some new policy statements that can encompass a lot of many statements into kind of one succinct statement. So how would you like me to kind of go through this? Many pages. Do you want me to kind of hit the highlights on some of the newer stuff and kind of how I got through it? You want to stop me to ask questions? I can do whichever you prefer. I don't know if you want to go through every single one.
I think we just went through the ads, didn't we, last time?
Couldn't hear you, Carl.
Did we go through just the ads last time and kind of...
The new ones?
The new ones and the ones that we felt we were sure those were strategic. I don't know, it just seemed to look at the new ones.
I think it's also valid to understand when you move something as opposed to just striking it out. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. And I'll just go ahead, if you guys have any suggestions, I'll just go ahead and start putting them into this so that we have them in here. So, when we first started this, we had kind of a committee. We had someone in public health, we had some planners, just kind of all just get this together and see how these worked out. So this first one is the first goal of the land use, current land use element. So we just pretty much kind of added efficiently in there to kind of get at some of what the rest of the policies were saying. So it kind of matched to that goal. And reworded, this 1.3 was actually a goal. So we thought it was more of a policy. So and kind of went with this goal. So we changed it from a goal to a policy. This list was, many things were already stated in another policy, and that's where you'll see those references to 1.3 or 1.3.1, or that they're already referenced in the environmental chapter or public facilities chapter. So if they are struck out, they're going to have their own new policy statement.
So we're down to basically three bullets in that section then?
Right, on this first one, yeah.
Okay.
And then the second one is a kind of a more detailed list of the first set. So we're down to kind of the last four here that we will make their own policy statements for.
On the back? Okay.
The next part of that land use chapter had specific UGA statements.
Excuse me, I know this is something that we've covered before, but I know that we're trying to clean some of this stuff up. So on page 2, the second bullet down about the UGA shall provide a balance of industrial, commercial, and residential lands. How are we doing that?
It is something that we have to do in coordination and cooperation with the cities, and by providing for flexibility and balance as we go through the plan update. That's the only way that we can do that.
So, and I think that's a very good point that we can't really do that on our own. I'm wondering if there should be some mention about our coordination and cooperation with the cities to provide that balance.
Sure, we can add or acknowledge that that is what we are doing and what we'll be doing, not only this through this plan update, but as we update our plans in the future. That's one component that we're going to be engaged in. We're already doing that now, but sure, I think we have to find a way to acknowledge that.
If this is a policy statement, though, that the other of how to get there is more strategy.
Right.
That's
one
option.
Yeah.
Strategy.
Some way.
We'll make a decision of that. Have something in our strategy or implementation section on how we get there.
Okay.
Moving on to page three. Some of the UGAs had specific policy statements. This first one, battleground, was on an area that had mostly been annexed already, so it's not in the county's jurisdiction. This Vancouver, then there's a list for Vancouver's UGA. That first one belongs to Shoreline Chapter. The second one is the Environmental Chapter. Third one there, the Public Facilities or Parks. And then this one I just reworded. So the restrictive amendments to the urban road boundaries, maximum land development existing urban road boundaries before expanding the urban road boundaries by encouraging. Okay, so this one, the next one was the first sentence left, the second sentence was more in strategy, so I'm suggesting to move that second sentence to the implementation chapter. Next one talks about water service, so suggesting to move it to public facilities chapter. Same thing with the following one regarding sewer. This next section was about the three creeks, so we've completed that. The next one was about Washougal. We just kind of changed the wording to say that Clark County supports expansion of UGA and supports applicable laws and regulations. Kind of gets at that point. Yeah, old one, no change. So this goal is the one I referred to at the beginning that we changed to a policy. We felt better under that goal. And it sounded it was a policy statement. The second one down there is that first sentence is similarly stated in the countywide planning policies of that chapter one. And then just to kind of split up that long kind of paragraph, and then kind of two separate thoughts, I just separated them into two. This next one is complete with our mixed use code and our form based code, but it's also a strategy. So. Moving that kind of language to the implementation chapter. Already stated above, this one no change. The zoning measure is complete. The property rights no change. And then we come to the next goal. We just kind of reworded it to sound kind of more direct there. Integrate land uses to reduce sprawl, promote physical activity through active transportation, and foster neighborhood and community identity. And this one was specifically important to our public health folks that wanted to make sure we have that active transportation and healthy living involved in that goal. So, okay, and then this is where I kind of put some new ones in, but I think got to the point that a lot of other policies were saying kind of the same way, but many times. So this first one is neighbor, and I try to make categories so we knew when we go back what we're really trying to get at. That first one is about neighborhood livability. Maintain and facilitate development of stable, multi-use neighborhoods that contain a compatible mix of housing, jobs, stores, schools, and open and public spaces in a well-planned, safe pedestrian environment. So it kind of gets at all this saying here. Next, complementary uses. Locate complementary land uses near one another to maximize opportunities for people to work or shop near to where they live. Compatible uses. Facilitate development that minimizes adverse impacts to adjacent areas. Connected and integrated communities. Facilitate the development of complete neighborhoods and sub-areas containing stores, restaurants, parks, and public facilities, and other amenities used by local residents. Everyone okay with that kind of language? We checked on other comprehensive plans of the City of Vancouver, see how they were wording theirs as well. So they're very similar to some of their policies. Okay, so this one felt it was pretty much stated in some of the above statements, didn't need to repeat it. This one I just kind of reworded, encourage commercial, compact commercial development with an appropriate mix of uses. And this I'm still contemplating because it kind of can be already kind of get at it, but doesn't exactly say that. Do it in there. Feel free to let me know what you think about that. The next one has to do with commercial development, and so I put some new policy statements in here. Facilitate development and create standards to achieve the following: increased street front use, visual interest, and integration with adjacent buildings, improved pedestrian connections and proximity of uses within developments, enhanced sense of identity in neighborhoods and sub-areas, publicly and or privately owned gathering spaces facilitating interaction. The next one, pretty much stated in above, is the 1.3 section. This one, access to transit, moved to our transportation chapter. And then the next many policies are all about urban resilience areas, and I think Gordy already touched on it at your last work session on policies. They're all going to be in the full chapter now. So all of these will be. Then we get to page 14, which gets into the chapter on community design. So no change on that folder. That first policy, just to make it more of a policy statement, maintain and enhance formal and informal open spaces throughout the urban areas that include parks, trails, and green spaces. That next one, and move it to the shoreline environmental chapter. The next one, no change. Next one, this one, just a more of a policy, encourage the retention and inclusion of existing mature vegetation as a design element in the site plan. And then that second sentence about the size of the trees, probably needs to be in code, so note for that. The next one, goal, I changed, we took out goal centers to keep this about urban, since we have a whole chapter that will touch on that, so just striking out goal centers and adding, just rewording it, development in urban areas should incorporate diverse uses designed in a manner that provides for a sense of community, supports the human scale, and allows for multimodal transportation options. And here's a new statement, or new policy. Encourage the development of urban activity centers that foster community identity and reduce reliance on automobiles. This one got to in the policies about commercial design that were up in the 1.4 policies. This one is changing the wording to encourage the development of multi-story mixed uses and other commercial uses that utilize regional architectural style and art at human scale.
What does that mean? At human scale.
We debated about that, and we had fun with it. What does it mean?
Yeah.
I think if I can say that you design, this is more of an architectural term, but you design in a manner that both visually, aesthetically, and to a scale that, as I was having this conversation with staff, I said, you know, for the first time you visit, let's say, New York, 50-story building is just out of scale for some folks, but even though people live in New York and it's pedestrian friendly, what we see here in Vancouver is what you may call to human scale when you look at downtown Vancouver, for example. So designing in a manner that is friendly, it is and in architectural term, if you're talking to a kid and you're 6 feet four, you want to talk down to them, you want to bend down. Very similar concept, that's what we mean. And you can find it in some communities, and I don't know how much better way to explain that, but that's that's the concept in architecture term, and those that do engineering and so forth. So that's what we mean there. You know, whether you do your, the way you do your street lighting, the way you, the type of features you use, same concept. Right now we're doing that even in internal houses that we build, instead of using not doorknob, now you use handle, different techniques, you know, things you design at human scale, it's just architecture.
Thank you.
Okay, the next one is struck or completed, that one. Next one, felt it was similar to our revised policy, what we're doing. The next one, more of the strategy, so moving to our implementation chapter. The next one, just kind of rewording, encourage developers in urban centers that maintain the unique character of the center, such as public comments, storefront, setbacks, landscaping, and pedestrian orientation. Following one sounded a lot, same kind of language as in our new policy in the 1.4 area. Same as the follow-up, the one below. This one, I know this needs to be reworded and moved to another section of the plan. So that's still about the railroad. So we're going to be working on kind of where that should go. Okay, then the following goal has to do with housing. Proposing a sub-market policy, so made it as a policy statement instead. The next one is a strategy, so move to the implementation chapter, as well as the next following two or three, down to the next goal. Again, thought it sounded more like policy than a goal, so just change it to a new policy.
Okay, I have another question.
Sure.
Back up to the policy of housing in Clark County. Should provide for a variety of styles, be oriented to the street, and be supportive of pedestrian and transportation alternatives. Does this mean that you're going to have all porches in the front and no garages in the front, and you're kind of going to dictate what style of house is going to be allowed?
You mean the oriented to the street?
Yes. I mean supportive of pedestrian and transportation alternatives. Yeah,
that
all of those.
That just being in an area that you can easily
where you can access to transportation
walk.
And walk.
Right.
Okay.
Right. It's not going to be applicable everywhere.
Yeah.
Because where it is feasible to do so, major transit routes, your commercial areas, how you design and build that. If you're building on alleyways, you know, that would be something else to take
right.
advantage.
I just, you know, it, making it a policy rather than encouraging it does, it's a step in a certain direction, and I think I'd be cautious. That would just be my statement. I would be cautious about that.
We'll
as beautiful as it might be.
We'll take a look at that. I think some of the things that we, our staff did when we came to the board, this board on the Highway 99 sub-area plan,
mm-hmm.
we took advantage of some of these design features where we think is appropriate.
Yeah.
There's some areas, there's some
that won't.
That you
the,
won't.
The problem of it is that when you make it a policy, when an area isn't appropriate for it or it isn't available, then that's our policy. Can't do it there.
But it's all in the design standards. It still comes back to the design standards for the area before it is or is not codified as something as specific as porches in the front, garages mm-hmm. in the back.
Right.
Right now, that can mean anything or nothing.
That's because it should.
Yeah.
Doesn't shall.
Yeah.
Should.
We would like to see that. But if it doesn't happen, doesn't happen.
That's why I read the should. That's
right.
Well, I think kind of the point Eileen's getting at is that a lot of times we see updates to the code that come through and it's like, well, you know, our policy says
this,
therefore we should change this to
It is a slippery slope, in my opinion.
But we've seen it both ways in that regard. I mean, the statement doesn't change, but depending upon the area, the outcome changes. And like just what Oliver said, you know, things that we put in place for Highway 99 are significantly different than we put in someplace else.
Well, here we're changing things from being an encouragement or a goal to a policy, and that's a step. First of all, that's a step
towards a strategy. Toward,
yes, and it's not
away from
as
strategy.
You can't
Once
say in the
strategy,
past. In the past, we did this because what we're doing now is the future, and we're taking it from a goal status to a policy status. So you can't use the past as an example. If we're sitting here and making, you know, saying this sounds like a good policy, I'm just, you know.
One thing about it, you know, if you put it in a strategy or implementation section, then you are forced to go say, how well are we doing this?
Yeah, because there's lots of strategies we
don't
implement.
That's the danger in putting it in a strategy or implementation. Then we have to go right out
code
to do it.
Okay.
You know, so
I'm not saying you move it to strategy. I'm saying it, you move it over to a goal. not make it a policy.
But policy gives you flexibility, and you know it may not be applicable to everywhere, but where it is applicable, this policy gets.
Well, then that's what you need to say, where applicable, because you can't, because you make it a policy, it's a policy.
Okay.
And the same, you know, it could become the same as putting it in a strategy where, oh, well, let's see if we're following our strategies to do that. So I don't mean to be nitpicking. I've just seen it. I've seen policies that are really injurious, this kind of thing. It's very dictatorial and might be pretty and aesthetically nice, but it just doesn't work all the time.
I think I like the idea of where applicable and I can
the one underneath there, or I think we went through there, is an implementation strategy. This transportation was a goal to now policy proposed. Transportation and parking requirements shall use land efficiently and be oriented to pedestrian and transit uses and minimize dependence on the automobile.
Mm-hmm. To me. Yeah. Well, thank you. Speak up, Ben. I don't want to be the only one speaking. I know it's a work session, but come on. Well, let's work it.
The next one moves to the public facilities transportation chapter as well as the next one. Following several. And they may end up being more strategies. They'll be back for you. And the last one was a goal we had in that chapter, and it had the policies. The next section is the historic, archaeological, and cultural policies and goals. And since I've been doing the historic preservation program now for 7 years, I really wanted to kind of get at where I know the Historic Preservation Commission's goals and kind of where we've been heading in the past few years. And looking through what we had, they were a lot of strategies that I think got us to where the Historic Preservation Commission is. So now it's moving kind of forward from there and where they want to go. So I've kind of redone this section to what I think they're going, and they've been reviewing these policies as well. So the first one is pretty much the same, improve for identify, maintain, update, protect archaeological and historic sites and structures to guide decision making and resource planning, environmental review, and resource management. And then simply policies that support that goal. Identify and evaluate archaeological and historic sites to determine which should be preserved. Identification and evaluation is constant and ongoing process. And this is what we do constantly through the survey process.
So I guess I have a little bit of a question on that. I know currently we've got stuff that's mapped as far as the probability of archaeological significance.
Sure.
What are the implications to the county by making this as part of the policies for the comprehensive plan as we go forward, like looking to the future with like budget and things like that, and even having people on staff where we're not necessarily duplicating the state's work? I mean, the state seems to fill a pretty big role as you go through the review process now in managing that aspect. Are we adding another layer to that process by at a county level now that we are going to need the staff and manage?
Are you saying on the wording of identify and evaluate that would consume staff resources?
Yeah, at what point, I guess, are we heading down that road to now where we're looking at having to have a staff archaeologist to help review those?
Well, I think the archaeological side, I do the building part of it, so I'm not as familiar with the archaeological sites, but I think those have been pretty much mapped out, and they're aware of where those sites are, and every time there's a major development, you know, there's requirements for looking further into that. So, and thinking of it, it's just more as, I guess, continuous, because it also is the historic sites, the building sites, and that's what we do continuously, is to, because things get older, they become more eligible for listing on our heritage register. It's something, this was the previous goal.
Do we want to separate how we treat archaeological from our historic stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, that the archaeological stuff is just pretty much the state does it. We just do what the state says.
Yeah. We can separate it because I know this new policies and reviewing it, it doesn't require us to do anything differently than we are doing now, because it's pretty much done at the state level when it comes to archaeological review. We just focus on the historical stuff, but we still do rely, we have layers on archaeological survey maps and so forth, but we don't know, there's some that are very not well, I wouldn't say well defined, but we don't say what they are. The state may do so, so we don't have people go there, destroy it, you know what I mean? So we're going to continue to do that. I don't think this changes that, technically speaking, it doesn't.
So we agreed to go ahead and split those apart?
Yeah, we'll try.
Okay. And that would help us then when we get down to 8.2. Okay.
So, identify those lands which are most likely contained as recorded archaeological or historic sites. Nominate cultural resources to the local, state, national historic register. The cultural resource inventory should be used as a reference and identification of significant structures and places eligible for nominations. Do that. Maintain the Clark County Heritage Register to provide a means to recognize and preserve cultural resources of local significance. We use the cultural inventory to do that. Review of land use actions should be sensitive and give consideration to protection of cultural resources. Promote preservation, restoration, rehabilitation, and reuse of historically or architecturally significant old buildings.
Do we have a definition of cultural resource?
In the comprehensive plan, or just...
Yeah.
I think we do. We'll check on that.
And we have our cultural resources inventory.
Sure.
Our list of eligible structures or sites within the county that are potentially eligible, most likely are, but just need the owners to come forward to nominate them.
Yeah, okay. Right. Self-selecting in that regard.
Yes.
Okay.
and then moved down to kind of the next. This was increase our former, our current goal was increased recognition of historic archaeological and cultural resources. So, in that statement, having new policies that kind of get there. Provide a program of public education concerning the need to preserve cultural resources and keep the public informed of actions to carry out preservation plans. Promote a wide variety of community involvement in preservation issues by linking the public with preservation groups and resources. Establish and maintain government-to-government relations with Native American tribes for the preservation of archaeological sites and traditional cultural property. Clark County shall pursue its cultural resource goals through collaboration with residents, property owners, cultural organizations, public agencies, tribes, school districts, libraries, and others. And moving some of these to our strategies. The next, I felt hits the first goal that we talked about. So just Xing that one out, it's already now that first goal. And then moving these to implementation. And then these are new. We didn't really talk about stewardship in the previous policies, but we've been doing a lot of this, so I thought it was important to add. So provide stewardship of county-owned cultural resources. Maintain county-owned cultural resources in an appropriate manner. I follow the Secretary of Interior standards for rehabilitation in consultation with the Historic Preservation Commission. Identify on a regular basis county-owned properties that may be historically significant. Listing the Clark County Heritage Register should be considered for county properties when appropriate. And then a new section on incentives for historic property owners. Devise and implement strategies and incentives that encourage historic preservation. Continue to utilize the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission as the authority and advisor to the Planning Commission, Board of County Commissioners, and other county agencies in matters of historic preservation. Expand the variety of incentives available to property owners to encourage, although many cultural resources are in private ownership, public agencies can offer incentives for their preservation. Develop methods to link cultural resource preservation with local economic development strategies, such as rehabilitation of commercial buildings, neighborhood revitalization, and forests. So those are the historic policies. So these last three are kind of our newer efforts from the Growing Healthier Report, from the Aging Right to Plan, and then from the sustainability work. So these are statements. I don't know if they're goals or policies yet. They're kind of going to get us there, some of the first iteration of bringing them here. So for the Growing Healthier, this kind of encompasses what their work was all about. Promote improved public health by encouraging integrated land use and street patterns for sidewalk and recreational facilities that support walking or biking and provide easy access. And then for the Aging Readiness Plan, encourage the development of age-friendly communities that have affordable and appropriate housing, supportive community features and services, and adequate mobility options to facilitate personal independence and the engagement of residents in civic and social life. And some of the policies that we've already talked about in the report. And then the last one, sustainability, promote the advancement of energy efficiency, green building, waste reduction, composting and recycling, solar and renewable energy use, and local sustainable food production, as well as actions to mitigate and adapt to climate change.
That's awesome. That's pretty big goals.
Yeah. It is a noble goal, I guess, but
I don't know how noble.
So I want to just add a couple of things to the presentation just for context. The way we conceived of this comprehensive plan rewrite, countywide planning policies are going to be chapter one. Chapter two is community development, and in that we wanted to make that kind of the launching point, put a lot of things in there for how our communities wanted to look kind of from a 360 perspective. So that's where you're seeing historic sustainability, growing healthier, all those kind of things. And that kind of, we wanted to have chapter two in it. It's kind of hard for you to see it because you've been getting it in kind of disjointed fashion. But the idea is that two will be kind of set the tone for what the county will look like kind of generally. And then we'll go off on transportation, we'll go off on housing, we'll go off on rural, we'll go off on economic development. That's the goal of this. And if you look at the table of contents, you see that kind of lines up. One of the things that's not evident in here, but if you look at, for example, something in the regulations, this is already adopted county policy. This isn't new. The county already has an aging readiness plan. We're just going to take an element of that and stick it in the comp plan. We're going to take an element from the bike and ped plan and stick it in the comp plan. We're going to take an element from the update of the parks master plan and put it in the comp plan. So what you're seeing here is just some words, but sitting in front of each of these new chapters will be a description of why we're doing this, what the GMA requirements are, why the county's involved with it, who's involved with it, and what we're doing. That will be a little bit of, we haven't got to that point yet. That will be a sort of the introductory chapter of each chapter, is what this is about and why it's important and what our requirements are, and then you see the goals and the policies. The third thing is that as we look at policy, it's the idea is that policy integrates with code that sits underneath it. And so when we talk about, does a policy mean a lot or maybe it means nothing, and you're absolutely right, it's the code that's written underneath it. And for the most part, code isn't going to change. So if you're familiar with the requirements for an archaeological program, those aren't going to change. Maybe what we say about them in terms of our thinking, or if we can say 50 words instead of 150 words, that's what we're going to try to do. So I've identified a couple of places where something is in the comp plan. Jackie had one here tonight. Clearly needs to be in the code. You don't need to put something about tree height and that's a regulation. That doesn't belong in your comp plan. So there's a little bit of that going on. So it'll make a little more sense when we get to the next iteration of this, where you have the countywide planning policies. Community development is kind of how we want the community to develop holistically, and then the other chapters will take off from that. Each chapter then will have a descriptor of hopefully fairly succinct of why we're doing this, who's involved with it, and what the county's doing, and then this list. Then there'll be an implementation chapter, and then keep in mind that at the end of the day, it's code that's underneath all of this that actually is going to be the implementing part of this, and we're not proposing to do a lot with that. So
does that mean that the comprehensive planning efforts are really just an exercise? If we're not making any code changes, but we're just changing the plan?
There will be areas where we will make changes to our code to be consistent with the policies that we've already done that. I think what God is saying is that in some areas where we are not making any policy changes by chapter, that the code that implements those policies are not going to change. And I think going forward, what our goal is really to say what and who, if we can get there. You know, the comp plan provides you a big picture, guidance. We want to be able to, at the end of the day, have each department in Clark County using the comp plan as a guide in what they do, whether it's stormwater, whether it's environmental services, for example, whether it's public works, to make sure that what is the comp plan becomes your guiding document to help you get to what is it that you're doing. So we can hand out, at the end of the day, we may come back here and say, okay, how do we do benchmark, who is doing what, who is supposed to do what. That's really the goal that we're trying to get at the end of the day, who and what.
So we're not going to use the comp plan to drive major change in code, but it'll be there to help facilitate changes going forward?
At this point, okay. That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to, because the way you say it, that right there kind of makes it.
I know it sounded very arrogant.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, we're going to do this whole planning, but we're not going to change any code.
If you sit down and take any chapter of the comp plan and begin reading, there's an awful lot of redundancy, an awful lot of things that are said two or three different ways. We're trying to get, this looks very long and complicated, but we have a lot of work to do to kind of boil it down to what is the essence. And furthermore, when we have a policy that says where there's room for interpretation and some code that supports that, that's where you come in. Because we can say it's the policy of the county to do this. What does that really mean? You help articulate that when you get an annual review, for example. What does the policy really say with regard to this application? So you have a role in this, on the back end of this, which is why we want to bring you in on the front end of this to show you what we're doing.
Gordy, am I right that the comprehensive plan hasn't been updated as far as like the plan policy language since it was first written? Is that right?
For the most part, that's true.
So there have been sections here or there that we've updated or amended.
We added an environmental chapter in 04, for example, that I did, and I think we've added schools. So there's been some things that have been added. But there's some things that are in the 21st century, like food security and food access and growing healthier and sustainability, and some of those things, those words aren't even in the current comp plan. We want to make sure that that language and some policy that you get to comment on gets into it in terms of, you know, things have evolved, things have changed.
So an easy way to look at this is updating and cleaning up a lot of the duplication.
Yes. There you go.
Just a lot of bookkeeping.
It's our intent to keep everything that we have in terms of the policy, but you know, say it once or twice instead of 15 times. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of work, and we do have a lot of work to do. But Jackie, you've all seen us working on various chapters. And at some point, we need to pull it all together, and we want to boil it down to where it's a management document for you and for the citizens of the county. And all the technical stuff that's in there, all the 30 or 40 pages of stuff, we'll keep that, but they'll become a technical report that will support. So if you want to know something about transportation in the county, that's where you would look. If you want to know what the county's goals and policies are, they're going to be in 5 pages in Chapter 6 or whatever it is.
Yeah, we good?
Yep.
Quickly from me, we had a work session with the commissioners on February 26th on the plan update, focusing on employment forecasts. The board did not indicate which way the leaning. They want to have another work session to drill down, if you will, on the inventory of employment lands. That will be on March 19th. Following that, hopefully we will engage some of our partners and other stakeholders to really look at employment forecasts that will be used for the plan update, and at least get to a point where we can get support, and I use the word support, but be on the same page with the port, economic EDC, the chamber, and the cities before the board makes a final decision on the employment number that we're going to use. We're hoping that will be at a public hearing and will occur sometime in April, perhaps April 8th. I don't have the exact date, but that's really our goal. Following that, then we will engage the cities to do the allocation of who gets what among the 7 cities in the county, with the exception of Yakut. We just completed their plan update. So that's how we are moving. There are many organizations that we are going to give them or provide them update as to what we are doing. And at some point, we will have folks like Bob Poole to come to the Planning Commission and provide you an overview of the vacant buildable lands model, so that some of you that are not familiar with it, that can at least be equip yourself to understand the model. It is one of the resources that we use to be able to say, here's how much we have. And if we can all agree that is the best that we can come up with, so that there is no disagreement towards the tail end of your process where we are disagreeing with the building community or some of the cities. So that effort is underway. Anytime we do the model, we share that information with the Responsible Growth Forum, for example, or the building industry, to make sure that we all reviewing the same output and making sure that they're understanding it and agreeing with what we are doing, and they're helping us also when there is issues. They're helping us to amend our model. It is a model, so we're trying our best to make it better anytime we run the model and engage those that understand it to help us make it better. We're doing that. So stay tuned. You have more coming before you, and if you have questions, issues, feel free to send us email. We have a new website on the plan update. Jackie, who was just here a minute ago, worked on that with our public information team. Feel free to go to it. It's a very good website. It will provide, and I think the county resident the opportunity to get informed, get engaged, be able to participate as we go through this plan update. I think I will encourage you to visit the website. If you go to www.clark.ward.gov/planning, it will take you to the Growth Management 2016 plan update. It is I won't really talk it up, but you should go visit that. This is a good website that we think will engage the residents to participate more with us. And we provide a section for them to put in their address, name, and it will be on our mailing list to keep them informed as we go move forward. Lastly, CVTV do a close-up with sometimes county staff, commissioners, and other departments. I had a close-up with the chair, Ron Becker, last week. And I think it's beginning to air. I don't know how well we did, but
I couldn't get a word in.
Yes. I wasn't the one talking, let me put it that way. You guys know, I don't talk too much. I just say the very little that I can and keep quiet.
That really surprised me. You and Ron and he's one talking, I don't know, I just don't see.
So anyway, that is now airing. I don't know how many times they will run that, but it's part of our outreach. So just want to let you know that that happened.
If you're awake at 3 a.m. like I often am, you can review our land, mining and
yes,
circles.
Yes, and today was the state of the county address. I would say it went very well. Again, they will rerun that on CVTV. You can see the three commissioners spoke and. Overall, I thought it went very well.
There is a joint.
Yes, there is a joint board and PC work session or meeting coming up. It's going to be April 17th, so you get the invite. I know that the legal notice for that meeting just went to the paper. So, if you have issues, we promise that we will look at the minutes of your deliberations that came out of that and highlight the map where you have discussions on maps. So we are going to do that and
April.
Make it
available.
April
7th. Yeah.
Yeah, April 7th.
So it's the one, like, is it in the evening?
Yes.
Yeah. When our normal, when that other?
Yes. Yes.
Right. Okay.
And then quickly you have another work session. Even though you have a hearing on March 20th, we will have a work session and we'll focus on policies dealing with economic development. We'll try to be as brief as we can so you can start your hearing on the I-542 marijuana facilities and then the amendment to the Urban Reserve section of our code at 6:30 the same evening. So that's what's coming. But the joint meeting with the commissioners is April 17th, 6:30. And, you know, it's the board meeting. I'm sorry, they will be the one, you know, telling you what the agenda is, and the chair can communicate with the board office and find out what the agenda is. That's all I have.
Okay. Anything from the commission? Meeting adjourned. Wait.
Yeah, one what? Final thing.
No go backs.
Yes.
Tape on.
Yes. I'm also going to be having a conversation with you as we come to hearings with the commissioners. I would like to engage you in a conversation of the type of quality of map that you would like us to use in our presentation. So I want to engage you in that conversation so that in the future when we come to you in a hearing, our maps is to the standard that you want it to be. What layers you would like to see. So I want to engage you.
Oh, I think it'd be really nice if you open up the Wi-Fi to us and give us access to
that's what I was trying to do.
Maps that we can zoom in and zoom out on using our own device.
See, that's why I'm putting it out there that I want to have that conversation with you, and I will invite our GIS staff to that meeting. And they will show you what is in our system and what you would like to see when we come to you.
Although then we're all going to be sitting here texting and emailing. Yes. Acting like we're looking at maps, right?
limit your use of your own devices during public.
There are apps and there are maps.
Sorry.
No, of course, yes.
No, I think this is important. You know, we have GIS. Got good maps and good layers. It's just that, you know, sometimes when
So it's one source, we all see the same stuff.
Yeah.
We make our decisions based on whatever limited information we all
produce. Okay, now I'm done.
Okay, there's your answer.
You're done.
No.